supervisors will reconvene. I want to acknowledge that we have a representative from Senator Daley's office and Assemblywoman Daley's office. Brayden, would you come in and just kind of raise your hand and let everybody know you're here? Appreciate it.
Brayden Coma, district representative for Senator Brian Daley. It's a little cramped in here, so if anyone wants to chat with me, I will be waiting outside and listening. So,
thank you. All right. We are at item 4A, County Road Commissioner, County Administration. Mr. Deeney, good morning.
Good morning. Tom Deeney, Road Commissioner, Sister County. I'm here to provide a brief update on the road situation out in Copco, specifically on Copco Road. Public Works is committed to have one of our crews spend 1 week per month out on Copco Road to effect repair. We are even renting specialized equipment, a skid loader. We don't have one of those in our inventory to help improve the efficiency while we do that work. We've done 1 week so far. Beginning of April, we'll do another week and we'll continue to move on like that. The road is experiencing severe damage through the majority of its length. The main repair material we use are asphalt grindings. They're a valuable material to the county. They usually pack in tight and keep the potholes sealed up. We've exhausted all the grindings in the northern part of the county. Now I'm trucking them up from Mount Shasta districts because that road is just eating so much material. The road's continuing to deteriorate. One week a month is slowing it down. But I'm not really affecting any solid repair. I know 1 week doesn't sound like a lot, but you have to remember when I have Road District 1 out there for that week, that means I'm not working on any other roads in District 1. And because of staffing positions, I'm actually pulling road workers from other districts to help fill that 1 week per month that we committed to a couple board meetings back. So there are huge sections of that road that are damaged to a point where a basic repair is not going to work. We're going to have to end up doing a dig out and repave at some point. We will not commit to do that while there's any kind of construction activity going on right now, because with the amount of material that's being moved on that road, it won't hold up. So the goal from the road commissioner point of view is to keep that road passable and start doing heavy repair operations once all the hauling is completed. The Fall Creek Hatchery, they are on the hook to replace a 250-foot section right in front of their hatchery that they did from hauling. That road had been asphalted. True, it was alligator, not in great repair, but now it's down to dirt. Provision in their encroachment permit is making them repay, so they'll start those operations soon. I will have a new set of road pictures for the next special board meeting. Originally, I was only doing them about once a quarter. Now it looks like I'm going to be doing them roughly once a month to more closely monitor the deterioration of the road. It's just happening between the heavy haul and the weather. It's happening faster than I expected, and I'm a pessimist when it comes to this. There is one piece of good news, so I'll close with that. The permitting process for the ultra-heavy loads that went up, the last one that we did went flawlessly from my point of view. We have been struggling there, incredibly difficult, but something has changed beyond our scope because the state refused to issue a heavy haul permit load to us until we issued our permit, which allowed us to work with the permitting company. And they did everything right. So that's the one bright spot from the road commissioner's point of view. And that's all I have, unless you have questions.
Quickly, and then I'll take it to the rest of the board. With regard to, are we tracking costs associated with this project in particular?
Absolutely we are. When this project kicked off, we made a special designation for it. We anticipated some damage, and we're recording those costs. That's how I can tell you that Copco Road is the most expensive road in the county.
And with regard to speed, we're hearing a lot of, I know you guys put speed limits or something in place to help slow down traffic. Is that still the case?
So we do have a work zone put through there, but those signs are not being widely followed. So I would encourage anybody who has an issue with traffic control, right, with actual trucks on the road misbehaving, please call CHP and make a report. I have lodged several complaints with CHP up to this point, but the more people who call in, especially the ones who live up there when they're having issues, that's how we're going to resolve that problem.
And we've heard last week and again this week that Cal Fish and Wildlife will be trucking the smolts around Iron Gate. Will that road be impacted in any way from the amount of haul that will take place? I mean, there's some 3 million fish that are going to be transported. I don't know how many loads that requires.
Well, so I don't have a definite answer, but I can tell you what I think. I think that that's going to be a drop in the bucket compared to the heavy construction equipment that's been being moved back and forth.
Great, thank you. Any questions from board members? Supervisor Valenzuela.
You know, we have a road rating system. There's whatever. Do we know what the before construction rating was and where it is now and what, you know, those kind of things we can quantify what's going on?
So it was rated in poor condition before. I don't recall the exact number.
But we can get that. Right?
But we can get that. And we have contracted to have a new, to have all those numbers updated, right? That's happening this year. Okay. So we will have a solid before and after.
Okay. Thank you.
Supervisor Howell?
A couple questions. What, if anything, can we as a board do to maybe spur the attention of CHP to enforce traffic law?
I would say keep reaching out to Commander Barr in our interlocal spot. If we don't get movement there, the board could write a letter to the commissioner of California Highway Patrol. That's what I would do.
Okay. And then I did have a comment on the dispute on the road piece. And I want to draw attention to photos 1 and 2 in the attachment.
I'm sorry, Supervisor Howell. That will be covered by Elizabeth. She's the expert in that.
Okay. It's under your topic, hopefully.
It's split. We're sharing today.
Okay. I'll wait.
Supervisor Chris.
Yeah. Thanks, Mr. Chair. Question I had, I second Supervisor Howell's concerns for CHP. So that's what I was thinking about. Short-term contact, because a month's a long ways away. Short-term contact to let them know our concerns. And then if we want to invite them to the next Board of Supervisors special meeting on this to explain what they're doing and hear the concerns in person.
Sounds like a wise course of action to me.
What?
That sounds like a wise course of action to me.
Thank you for saying what. Yeah. So anyway, trying to bring him here so we could short-term, because I don't want to wait a month and then have the conversation then. So whatever short-term things that you think needs to be done and then bring forward and, you know, just to have them explain your concerns and whatnot. In regards to, I'm going to ask this question probably every meeting, so and you've answered it very well. Copco Bridge, you said it was rated very strong, healthy. Are we still looking good for that bridge? And I say that because emergency services, the fire station's on one side and all that, so how are we looking for that?
We still look just fine, all right? So that bridge was built to handle a bonus purple load, which is over 80,000 pounds, and the ultra-heavy loads are not slated to go across it, right? They're not coming up that way. So that bridge is just fine, continues to be fine, and you can continue to ask, but I promise I'll let you know if something happens.
Perfect, okay. And then for emergency vehicles on Copco Road, ambulance, fire engines, you said you're making it workable now. I take it emergency traffic can still get up there and get out if they need to.
Yes, it changes from day to day, but I was just talking to the Cal Fire Chief, and they have to cut their speed going through there to what they used to be able to before. That's kind of the condition that the road's in. I did break my 1 week a month rule and sent somebody up there today and yesterday because of concrete speeding. So it's still passable for emergency services, right? But it could be better. But please understand from a public works point of view, we're doing absolutely everything we can just to keep the road open.
Absolutely. No, your work and your team's work is great. We appreciate it. I'll stop there.
Supervisor Owen?
Yeah. First, I want to thank you for spending so much time on the roads and trying to keep things as good as possible. I've been up there over and over and over again, and I realize how bad it's gotten since before the project started into what it is now, and it's pretty dangerous. But you have worked tirelessly to try to keep things in as good a shape as possible, and I appreciate that because I've bugged you over and over again. As far as trucks go, I do have to say one good thing. A week and a half ago when I was up there, I actually encountered a truck coming in the opposite direction toward me, and he actually reached out and did one of these to me, meaning there's two more trucks coming behind him. So he actually was a considerate driver, and I will give him credit for that because there aren't too many of those up there. Mm-hmm. So kudos to him, whoever he was. I really do appreciate that in a truck driver. But many other times there have been situations that weren't so good, and I've seen people actually get run off the road. So there's some give and take there. One of the questions I do have for you is, at the project site at Iron Gate, there are fences to keep people out. People can't get through from one side to the other, and I've had constituents ask about fire safety when there's no exit from people at that side of the lake and the river. So are those gates and fences going to be taken down at some point, and especially this summer when we're into fire season? Is there a way for people to get from one side to the other through that project zone when and if there's an emergency situation?
Sorry, Supervisor Ogren, I can't answer that. Those fences are on private property, so I have no jurisdiction over what goes on with those. Perhaps that will be addressed later by another speaker.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Supervisor Chris?
Yeah, in regards to the roads, I'm also hearing of conditions occurring on Ager Beswick Road. So when we reach out to CHP, not just copper road to the CHP, but also traffic on Ager Beswick.
Yes, I will do that, and I have received those comments as well. Ager Beswick, I have no doubts is being affected, but it is, if we're going to triage this thing, Copco Road needs to get the attention first. That's where the majority of the issue is.
Oh, sorry, not for repairs, but just for CHP patrols.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, gotcha. Right.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Dean.
Thank you.
Ms. Nielsen.
Good morning, Board. Elizabeth Nielsen, Deputy County Administrator. As the Board is aware, on January 15th, several days following initiation of drawdown at Iron Gate Reservoir, the Public Works Department and the county were informed of a significant road sloughing issue on Copco Road at milepost 13. County staff coordinated with the State of California, KRRC, and their contractors. And on February 1st, KRRC's contractors completed repairs at milepost 13 for a total cost to KRRC of $277,788 and change. On March 7th, the county received a dispute notice from KRRC and a proposed second amendment to our Roads and Bridges MOU. KRRC is disputing that their project work was the sole cause of damage at milepost 13, and they are asserting that Pacific Corps' use of the road and the pre-existing condition of Copco Road are also to blame for the road failure. As part of their dispute, KRRC is requesting that the repair costs that they paid at milepost 13 be debited from the amount of funding to be provided by KRRC to the county for post-dam removal repairs on Copco Road, which was committed into a fund for the county to draw on at a later date, as detailed in the Roads and Bridges MOU. County Council is engaging the services of Paul Wieland at Nossaman LLP to represent the county through this dispute process, and staff will be bringing any updates and requests to the board at a future date. The item before you today is just informational. We are not asking for any motion on the draft second amendment proposed by KRRC or anything in that regards. I just wanted to make the board aware of the developments. Thank you.
Supervisor Howe?
Yeah, I came back to what I was going to say. I'm looking at the attachment one, photos one and two, and what I see in that photo with the deformity of the sediments in the lake is the typical slope failure that you do see with a saturated slope. When you have heavy equipment going over it and vibrating the surface and liquefying everything underneath it, because if that were just a culvert failure or a surface failure, as what's alleged in the challenge back to us, it wouldn't deform the sediments down at the lake level after the drawdown. So I'm in complete opposition to doing anything other than getting a full reimbursement amount for this activity.
No. Okay. Anyone else for Ms. Nielsen?
No, I know this is informational.
Yeah,
we'll be working with you the process.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nothing else on 4A, I'm assuming. Is that correct?
Correct.
So we'll move on to 5A. Good morning, Chelsea.
Good morning. Chelsea Murphy, CKM Environmental. I am the project manager on behalf of the county for the project. I'm going to be giving a quick update to the board today on what we have been working on from the county side. We have KRRC is here to give a project update, so I won't dwell too much on that. We also have CDFW and other presenters in the room. So the project is proceeding. Cop code number one is being removed currently. Assisted sediment removal, which was originally scheduled to end March 15th, has been approved by FERC to continue to April 15th. So if you are seeing any sort of excavators, heavy equipment, etc., in the reservoir footprints, that is assisted sediment removal that's going to continue until April 15th. It has been a busy month since our last meeting in COPCO. Myself and county staff have been hard at work on the water quality issues. Many of you know, as is stated in the emergency declaration, we have created the water quality memo to provide context to the sampling results that the county took in January of this year. We have been continuing discussions with FERC and CDFW. As directed by the board during the last meeting, I have been in conversations with FERC in an informal fashion over the past month or so. And we have been discussing the following topics as well as other topics as they come up, but the big topics of concern have been large-scale reservoir fencing, the Klamath Mitigation Fund, roads and bridges, communication and public engagement, amongst other topics. The conversations are going well with FERC. They are hearing the county's and the public's concerns. However, there is a limit to how much action can be taken in an informal setting. And that
can you expand upon that just a little bit? What does that mean?
Sure. While conversations are happening between myself and a point of contact at FERC, the issues that are being experienced by the public and county are wide-ranging in topic, and while FERC is engaging with other experts, there may be a need to do something a little bit more formal so that more formalized conversations and actions can be taken.
And what does that mean in the form of?
So the form of the way that we proceed, if it's the board's desire, is for the county to write a formal letter that gets entered into the FERC docket and gets put on public record. And then at that point, FERC will initiate an investigation, if you will, into a more formal investigation into the concerns. And then they will be required to respond in some way, shape, or form in a formal fashion back through the e-library and on the docket.
Hold one second. Supervisor Haupt's mic is not working properly. Do we have something else?
I don't mean
to interrupt, but I want to, because I know he's going to have questions. I want him to be heard.
It's all part of this, and we don't have any other control over it.
Can't hear me anyway.
He's got to speak up.
Well, let's, I'm going to go over everything. Nothing.
Okay.
Okay. So I'll hold off until we get you fixed over there. Supervisor Overton.
Amazon will have it here in an hour.
Supervisor Overton.
I would request that you work with staff to create a formal letter to FERC outlining our concerns and possible solutions regarding this project and how to move forward so that we can get some real solutions to these issues from FERC and that they actually come up with some answers for us in a formal manner. And we need to have that, some kind of a letter formulated and back to us to look at by our next meeting.
Yes, I will do that. Thank you, Supervisor.
And
as in, I'm sorry, as in the next board meeting,
board
which
meeting?
Is the second. We're at deadline, already past deadline on that right now.
As soon as possible.
So when's deadline?
Mondays usually, but we've got a holiday this coming Monday, so I would certainly like to post by Thursday to have Friday to prep for the meeting.
I don't know if I can write about that.
Okay. So at least you would have something by the 16th is the next meeting.
Would be the next regular.
Is that correct? I don't want to wait till the next Klamath meeting.
Yeah, no, I get that. I would ask maybe we could see a draft so we can get input from the board. I don't want to see this come before the board. Oh, we should have done this, this, and this, and they have to.
No, but at least get it started so that we can.
My point is to have her get the draft to us,
yes.
So before we get to the meeting, we can have input.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You have that, Chelsea?
Yeah. So a draft prior to the board meeting on the 16th.
Through work through Ms. Nielsen to work to get it to us so that. If there's any input.
Absolutely.
Okay. Supervisor Chris?
Thank you. Yeah, I support the letter as well. I'm not going to go over what should be in it because it's already been discussed several times before. But I also support that letter, the formality of it. It's important to note for folks to know that the letter that we sent isn't just to make noise or just to protest, but they're legitimate, real concerns. About debating the aspects there, a little bit debating actual impacts that we face. And it's factual, and it's actually what we are dealing with for the benefit of our constituents so that their concerns can be heard from FERC.
Supervisor Hogan?
You mentioned that you've had conversation regarding the mitigation fund?
Yes, ma'am.
We've had conversation regarding that over and over and over again. One of the questions that has come up is regarding public funds and the amount of the original fund, and that's never been answered. So it'd be nice for that to be a public figure. The other question is, if that fund money hasn't all been spent down, where does that money go?
As far as we know, as far as the county knows, and this is based off of information from KRRC, the leftover money within the mitigation fund goes back into the project.
Why they don't want to spend
it. Yeah,
of course. Yeah. Quiet in the audience, please. Anything further?
I think that covers it.
Supervisor Help, you want to try?
I yell loud.
Okay.
Yes.
How's that? I want to make a request. It's two part. Number one, I'd like for FERC to disclose to us who their dam safety engineer is that's assigned to the project. And I would like to see the inspection reports, the correspondence, and the communication between the dam removal entity and that engineer through a Freedom of Information Act request, also through the Congressman Malta's office.
Anything further?
Nothing further.
How are we doing with regard to the MOU that we asked from Cal Fish and Wildlife? We received a response prior to the smolt release that didn't make it. And that, at least in my mind, now creates even a further dilemma that that's 800 some odd thousand fish. You know, I know that they expect a 3% return for spawning, but that's, they're gone, and we're not done yet. So the one thing that I guess that we've been concerned about, and I know that the department basically said they can't do an MOU, but the problem we're going to have 3 years forward is if there is a decreased number of spawners, and I'll just say due to the dam deconstruction project, there'll be a short-term memory and there'll be a loss of staff over the next 3 years that won't remember today and what's happened. We need protection for the Scott and Shasta systems as well as the project up in the basin with regard to, I'll call it hold harmless, if it's related to essentially what's transpiring with the project itself. Not looking for it, I guess, it seemed as though that letter sounded as though we were asking for something permanent and countywide. I think it's specific to anything to do with what we're experiencing currently.
And CDFW is here today, and they will be speaking, and they will be addressing specifically the MOU in their comments.
Okay.
So I will leave it up to Michael Harris to discuss that, but I have noted that, and I will continue conversations with CDFW moving forward.
Okay. Thank you.
If,
go ahead.
If I may, I know Chairman Popseff, you had asked that I take some notes to address some public comments.
Yes.
So there's a lot that came up during public comment. I'm going to address a few things that I can answer right now to the best of my ability. So one of the comments was, or a lot of the comments that we heard today were in regard to sediment downstream of Iron Gate, accumulation of sediment moving downstream, accumulating in pools and riffles and things within the river system. I will say that my understanding and our understanding of the county of large-scale sediment removal is not part of the project plan. So there is no plan to do large-scale sediment removal downriver. However, if residents are seeing accumulation of sediments in front of their property or on their property, we encourage them to call KRRC. KRRC is obligated to go out and investigate those sediment deposits and take samples for arsenic. And then, depending on what the results of those samples are, it will depend on whether or not KRC is obligated to remove the sediment or not. So if this is happening to people's property, please reach out to KRC.
Go ahead, sir.
Just so that the public knows, Ms. Chelsea here works for the county, and so she's not speaking for KRC or the Fish and Wildlife, but she's our point of contact with those entities and the liaison between. So she's representing us. And
she's the project manager.
Yeah, we had this another time. Some people got mad at her for what she said. But no, she's just the liaison project manager reporting, but she works for you and for us.
Thank you, Supervisor. Appreciate that. There was quite a few questions about when the river system will become stable again. And this goes to the question of what does long-term success mean. Excellent questions. I'm going to be working with KRC and putting a request in that becomes more part of the discussion and that there's clarity around what long-term success looks like. In terms of river sediment accumulation, I do know that there was LIDAR flown, so that there was surveys done of the river system prior to dam removal, and there is a requirement to do the same surveys after dam removal is complete, so that there will be data coming in on where there is sediment, what accumulated where, what the river looks like after dam removal. So there will be some additional data to look at some point. Perhaps KRC KRRC can answer when that is. I'm not 100% sure, but I do know that that is part of the plan. Air quality monitoring. So there were air quality monitors that were deployed by COPCO. There has been quite a bit of concern regarding dust and air quality from the reservoirs themselves. The county had asked the question of whether or not there's going to be large-scale dust suppression as part of the project within the reservoirs, and the answer is no. There is dust mitigation required for stockpiles related to construction, but not for the reservoir area themselves. There have been a lot of questions and a lot of discussion related to water quality. There was a commenter earlier on that had asked the question regarding beneficial use. So beneficial use, and the use of the water within the Klamath for things like irrigation, for having it for pets to drink out of for recreation, etc. That has been a question that has been posed to the water board by the county. What are the potential impacts to beneficial use of river water when it has very high turbidity, when we're seeing elevated heavy metal constituents, etc.? So what will the impacts be on irrigators, on their plants, if the animals eat the plants, is there bioaccumulation? So we have asked the water board to address this issue. Supervisor Ogren, I believe you asked a question to Mr. Deeney about the gates around. I will check in with the contractors about those gates and see if it's possible, and see what their emergency protocols are for being able to open those gates during fire season if there is an emergency. I will fall back on that. And that is all.
You mentioned or you reached out to the water board to do ask for testing regarding irrigation and all that kind of stuff in a formal letter. And
so county staff and myself have reached out to the water board. I've had two conversations with the water board, and county staff and I had a conversation yesterday where requests from the last board meeting were made.
Okay.
They were also made in writing via email.
Okay.
To test the water quality in the Klamath as well as the wells.
Okay, thank you.
Supervisor Chris? Thank you, Mr. Chair. In regards to the dust mitigation aspect, we know, I'll talk about vegetation here as well, combine the two together. So for the seeds that are planted and the vegetation, was there any plans of irrigating, at least that were, that vegetation to enable it to take off the dust mitigation?
So irrigation for plant growth and dust mitigation are a little bit separate.
Okay.
So it's my understanding, and KRC again is here, and perhaps Mark can speak a little bit more to this subject, but the intent of planting early, it's our understanding, is that the hope is that the plants will take, it will help seal in the sediments so that you don't have a lot of dust. If and when it gets dry and when winds kick up, it is meant to stabilize the soils, the vegetation. Is irrigation for plant growth part of the plan? I believe so, but I do not think, if I remember correctly, it is not to have large-scale irrigation of the entire reservoir.
Yeah, what I mean by irrigation is not 8-hour sets every day, but that, you know, that would be to get it started, and that, of
correct,
course, could be used officially for dust mitigation as well as spread it down.
Perhaps, yeah.
Okay, I'll follow up with the appropriate first folks in there. Thank you.
Supervisor Howe?
Is my mic working?
Talk
no.
Loud.
Just yell.
No? No? I keep up. this chair is a curse.
That's a tray.
I asked a question of CAL FIRE about their pre-positioned GPS dip sites, you know, for the Siskiyou unit and initial attack for helicopters. I think the answer was that they had not revised that yet. Could you reach back out to them, given the testimony that we've heard about the dipping pools being filled in on the river, to see what contingency they may be developing for this fire season?
Yes. Yeah.
So along that, I think that at the COPCO meeting, we had requested a demonstration for the community up there of what this firefighting capability will look like. I'd rather test it prior to a fire than waiting until the fire's there to find out it doesn't work. So I think Cal Fire, the fire warden, I think he's working on that when they have helicopter time to be able to go up there and try it and provide a demonstration so the residents can have some assurance that whatever, it works. Last week we got a report, and I don't know if this is for you or for Mr. Shinoni, that the water supply that's that's filling the tanks for the wells that have been depleted per se, is it, where's that water coming from? Is it coming from the Klamath River?
Not to my knowledge, no. But that may be a question for KRRC because okay. They are the ones that are filling those tanks for the wells that have gone dry.
Okay. And then I'll put you on the spot just a little bit.
Perfect.
Is there any frustration with working with agencies outside of the county with regard to getting, I guess, answers to some of the concerns and issues that we're coming up against?
No. And the reason being is that the conversations that the county has been having have been cordial. We have asked questions. We have received some answers. Is it all the answers? No, but we're working on it. Building relationships with agencies is a long-term thing. Building relationships with anybody is a long-term thing. And so while we might not always get the answers in the fashion that we want them, as quickly as we want them, or the right or the answer that we would like to hear, there is still quite a bit of good communication and working together. You know, there are some desires that the county would like to see that it may not be possible from the agency's side to be able to fulfill. And so we are being honest in that discussion and reporting that to the board and to the public as soon as we hear it.
So with regard to the agenda item that we have on today, this emergency declaration, potentially, I get from my perspective, just like what you've called for with this FERC letter, raising the flag that there, formally, that there are some concerns that our residents are experiencing. Do you see that getting in the way of the communication with the agencies that you currently have?
Know that the potential is there.
All right, let's move on to, sorry, Ms.
Through the chair.
Yes.
Natalie Reed, County Council. If I could make a recommendation in regards to your direction to staff about review of the letter to FERC before the April 16th meeting, I would recommend that the board designate two of its members to review the draft.
Okay. Supervisor Howe is one.
I would.
And Supervisor Chris.
Okay, so staff will work with this.
Okay. And then it will be brought to the board for public discussion.
Correct.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Chelsea.
Thank you.
I see Mr. Dean. Are you next?
No, sir. Rick King, Community Development Director, through the chair, just want to make a point out for the memorandum that was put out for the data for the sampling. Mm-hmm. There's a typo in there. It's basically in the margins of page.
You're talking about that emergency deck, though, aren't you, or no?
Well, potentially.
Okay.
The memorandum specifically is potentially attached to the emergency deck.
Okay.
There's
we'll
a
make
typo
that correction when we get
it.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. We'll move on to item 5B, Klamath River Renewal Corporation. Mr. Branson, I saw you somewhere. Good morning.
Good morning. You have a presentation for us, I believe, KRC March update. Thank you. Good morning, Chairman Cobb, staff, supervisors, Mark Bransom with the Klamath River Renewal Corporation. As always, the Renewal Corporation appreciates the invitation to be here today to provide an update. I've been sitting out in the overflow seating this morning since the meeting kicked off and listened attentively to the public comments and the questions and comments from the board as well, and very much appreciate the opportunity to hear the comments that were made this morning, the expression of concerns, and
and some of the questions, and hope we can clarify some of the issues and continue to address some of these issues. So if we can just move to the first slide. Thank you. So again, just a reminder, these are the four dams slated for removal. These dams and reservoirs spun turbines to produce electricity. They did not store water for agricultural or municipal uses, nor were they operated for flood control. They were strictly hydropower facilities. Next slide, please. Why are these dams being removed? Well, they created water quality problems, which we're trying to address. These dams created toxic algae blooms almost every year that harmed aquatic species as well as humans that were exposed to the water. Secondly, they block access to almost 400 miles of historic spawning habitat for salmon and steelhead and lamprey and other aquatic species. So they impair water quality. They create an unnatural temperature regime and other impacts from the reservoirs that have previously contributed to fish mortality. And that's the reason that the dams are being removed. Next slide, please. As was mentioned previously, we do have authorization to begin the removal of COPCO number one dam. We performed a test blast a couple of weeks ago in order to dial in the proposed approach to removing COPCO number one dam. The test essentially was conducted to determine whether we could remove the gates and the gate bays and some of the superstructure that you see there above the dam, as well as to begin the removal from the top of the dam downward. That test blast the results of that test blast were analyzed and reported, and the contractor continues to make adjustments in order to dial in the approach that they will use when they begin the actual removal of the concrete dam itself. If we can go to the next slide, I do want to acknowledge that there were observations of dust, but we do have dust control measures that pertain to the blasting activity. The blast occurred later in the day than was had originally planned, and as a result of that, the wind conditions had shifted. And I just want to point out that as we move forward with the blasting schedule, these environmental conditions such as wind speed and wind direction and other factors will be taken into consideration so that the blasting can be done in a manner that will reduce the amount of dust and to control fly rock from the blast. Next slide, please. So again, as I've mentioned before, we defined drawdown in a couple of phases. The initial drawdown was the period in January and February when we breached the dams and we drained out the stored water from behind the reservoirs at J.C. Boyle in Southern Oregon, at COPCO number one, and at Iron Gate Dam. The second phase of drawdown is what we refer to as the final drawdown. And final drawdown really is what we're waiting for to determine what the balance of winter looks like and what the spring runoff looks like. We don't want to initiate removal, and we will not initiate removal of the earthen sections of either J.C. Boyle or Iron Gate Dam until we're sure that we have gotten through the spring freshet and any risk of a high flow event. So let me just clarify why it is that we're proceeding with removal of COPCO number one, but we won't initiate removal of J.C. Boyle or Iron Gate Dam until later in the spring or early summer. It's simply because COPCO number one is a large concrete dam, and it can safely be removed and not be concerned about having a large flow event even overtopping COPCO number one dam, because it will remain safe and remain in place. We have significant capacity in the low-level tunnel at COPCO number one to pass an incredible amount of flow, and of course we can refill any one of the reservoirs should we have a large flow event. But in the event that we had a very large flow event and the water was overtopping COPCO number one dam, we don't have any concerns about that because it is a concrete dam that can remain safely in place. So we will be making a request to FERC next month for the final approval to begin the removal at J.C. Boyle and Iron Gate Dam once we're sure that we've gotten through the spring runoff and the high flow conditions. Next slide, please. There have been some comments, and we acknowledge that the drawdown at Kako Number 1 Reservoir did occur more quickly than had originally been anticipated. There are a number of reasons for that. Frankly, we were in a low flow event as a result of the conditions, the hydrologic conditions at that time of the year. And we simply didn't have the inflow into the reservoir that we had had anticipated as part of our preliminary planning process. So we dealt the hand, we played the hand that we were dealt with regards to the hydrology. We had previously lowered the reservoir to the minimum operating pool in advance of opening the adit and initiating drawdown at Kako Number 1, and we did that for a couple of reasons. One was to reduce the amount of water that would be stored in the reservoir to release, but as importantly, and perhaps more importantly, was to allow the geology and the hill slopes around the reservoir to begin to drain out as a result of the lower water level, which resulted in promoting more stability of that geology. Commenter earlier today noted that there have been no reports of any rim instability issues, no impacts to homes or other structures with regard to settling or movement or failure of any slopes. And part of that was a result of our action to lower the reservoir a couple of weeks in advance of the drawdown. So we managed the drawdown rate to the best of our ability, given the hydrologic conditions and the operational constraints and opportunities that were at our disposal in order to minimize the risk of slope instability issues and other concerns. And again, just to reiterate, weeks now after the completion of the initial phase of drawdown, we've seen no instability issues. Next slide, please. A lot of discussion about sediment. We continue to monitor and test both water and sediment in the reservoir footprints as well as in the river below Iron Gate Dam. Just as a refresher, we anticipated that somewhere on the order of 5 to 7 million cubic yards of sediment that had been stored behind the dams over the last century would be mobilized during and after the drawdown and moved down the river. That number is essentially identical to the amount of sediment that the Klamath River transports on an annual basis. The sediment has been blocked by these dams for a century, impacting a natural river process. And so we're in the essentially in the process of restoring this important function in the river, adding a significant amount of sediment in a relatively short period of time. But again, these are, for context, relatively consistent with regard to the amount of sediment we anticipated would be released and the amount of sediment that the Klamath River moves. Before the dam removal plans were approved, the state, a number of state and federal agencies took a very close look and did a lot of characterization work on the sediment chemistry. And the conclusion of those regulatory agency was that it was safe to send this sediment downriver. As of right now, the testing that was done by the county and the testing that the Renewal Corporation has done and will continue to do is not revealing any public health concerns. And we will talk a little bit more about future sampling and testing. Next slide, please. The Department of Interior, working with the Environmental Protection Agency, conducted comprehensive sediment testing in the reservoirs and in the river. Their published findings included the confirmation that the sediments were primarily the toxic dead algae, fine silts and sands and gravels, and no compounds detected that would pose any danger to downstream communities or the environment with expected dilution. That is, the amount of water in the river during the drawdown would dilute the material that was tested to the level where there were no compounds that would pose any risk or any danger to downstream communities or to the environment. And we monitor a number of water quality parameters, and we're compliant with our permits, and we send those test results to the regulators on a regular basis for their review and any comments or questions that they may have on the data. Next slide, please. There was an anticipated increase in the sediment load. The whole idea of the drawdown was to drain the reservoirs and mobilize and move out much of the accumulated sediment from behind the dams. Now, the county's testing indicated that there were certain metals detected above drinking water standards, but again, unfortunately, there are no active drinking water systems in the Klamath River. We were given a list of the known certified water systems, and we've mitigated those. The only active water supply system utilizing surface water from the Klamath River was the Caltrans-operated Collier Rest Area. And before drawdown, continuing today and continuing into the future, the Renewal Corporation will continue to provide an alternative source of potable water for the Collier Rest Area. We have a contract out of Reading with a potable water supplier who brings potable water to the Collier Rest Area on a regular basis to maintain their water supply. The source of that water is either potable water from the Reading area or from the city of Wairika, with whom that contractor has an arrangement. If we can go to the next slide, please. This is a screenshot from a recent update by the state water boards of their frequently asked questions. And the question that they've posed and they've answered is, could sediment from the dam removal leach metals and other substances into a groundwater well located downstream of the dams along the Klamath River? And the answer is no. Metals in mobilized reservoir sediments are not expected to leach into groundwater wells. Sediments with higher concentrations of metals will either be mobilized into the ocean or stabilized in place, minimizing groundwater well exposure exposed to sediments. So the likelihood of sediment getting into groundwater wells in areas along the river below Iron Gate Dam is negligible. Next slide, please. In response to the county's testing, the Renewal Corporation has made a decision to do some additional voluntary testing and sampling. And I want to walk you through the preliminary thinking on our protocol. So our intention is to resample at all of the identical locations, the six locations that the county sampled in January and February, plus a location that our restoration contractor uses for grab samples, which is located just downstream of Iron Gate, in order to help replicate those sample locations and the testing. So we will use the same metals list and the laboratory that was used by the county to test the results of those samples. We do want to expand the range of parameters. So we're going to add in a few parameters that will allow us to make comparisons of the test results to other water quality standards. It's time to move away from comparing the results of sediment water quality in the Klamath River to drinking water standards, because nobody's using drinking water from the Klamath River. The State Water Board, all regulators, public health officials advise that nobody drink from surface water, whether it's the Klamath River or any other surface water body. And we know that there are no certified water systems, and the only one that is certified, we're replacing water. And so we are going to expand the range of parameters so that we can compare to other standards beyond drinking water to see whether there are any human health or impacts to aquatic species, because none of the data presented so far allows us to draw any conclusions about whether there is really a public health risk. No demonstrable evidence from any of the water quality testing that has been done or reported that there's a public health risk. None. Okay, we're going to expand the range of parameters so we can start asking some questions beyond this issue of drinking water standards. We will share the protocol with the county and with the water boards to give the those entities an opportunity to comment prior to us going out and doing the sampling and testing. And we'll provide the data and a narrative report to the county within a week of receiving the report from a third party independent water quality analyst that we will ask to review our test results in the report that we prepare. And the next slide, please. So we've arranged for a meeting with county staff for purposes of obtaining some information, including the GPS coordinates and or detailed narrative descriptions of the locations, so we can exactly replicate those locations of the county's sampling. We've asked for the standard operating procedures for the sampling device, the depth, the field sample handling protocols, and other information, including chain of custody and those kinds of things. So again, we can replicate that precisely. And then we will talk to the county about the timing of the samples. So to be determined, we will determine the best time to go out and collect those samples, likely sooner rather than later. We don't want to directly overlap the county's future testing or other testing that may be done So we'll work with the county to identify the best time to do that that sampling as well. And I believe we'll be holding that meeting with county staff in the coming days. Next slide, please. So I'm going to transition to a little bit of an update on where we are with some of the restoration activity. Go to the next slide, please. So we've completed the first phase of planting of 98 different species of native plants mixed into five different seed mixes. For 5 years ahead of the restoration, we had crews out hand collecting seed, about 13 million seeds that were sent to commercial nurseries that grew plants to turn those original 13 million seeds into almost 17 billion seeds. And since January, our crews have been hard at work revegetating the reservoirs with those seeds, as well as bare root stock, covering all three of the reservoirs 100% as of last week, I believe. Next slide, please. As of last week or thereabouts, over 72,000 live plants have been put in the ground. Almost 28,000 acorns planted, and almost 66,000 pounds of seed have been sown through a combination of hand seeding as well as aerial seeding from helicopters. 100% of the reservoir footprints have been covered, and we'll just move into a maintenance mode, and we'll be doing temporary irrigation on portions of the reservoir footprints to assist this vegetation to get established. And just as a reminder, we've discussed this before, job one with regard to locking these sediments in place and controlling dust is to get this vegetation established. And so that's why we started this revegetation effort as soon as the drawdown began. And we're going to continue with this effort for the coming years to make sure that we meet the performance criteria and the success criteria that have been established for density and plant mix and other things. So if we can move to the next slide, please. Once again, Wren, our public information officer, is available through this contact information. There is her email address and her phone number, and of course, my contact information is also available, and we always are available for comments, questions, participation in board meetings and other forums where our presence could be helpful and an opportunity for us to continue to have dialogue and exchange information and address issues as they arise. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll wrap up my formal presentation and be happy to take any questions.
Sure.